We continue now with spiritual combat, how to combat sins of the flesh. Chapter 19, of the way to resist the sins of the flesh. These sins must be resisted in a way peculiar to themselves and different from the method used against any other temptation. In order, therefore, to a successful resistance, three periods must be observed. 1. Before the temptation, 2. During the temptation, and 3. After the temptation. 1. Before the temptation, the struggle must be against those things which are wont to occasion it. First, thou must combat the vice, but never confront it. On the contrary, avoid to the utmost of thy power every occasion and every person whence thou mayest incur the slightest danger. And, if at times compelled to converse with such, let it be briefly, with a grave and modest demeanor, and with words of severity rather than of excessive tenderness and affability. Neither be confident in thyself if thou art free, and during many years of such exercises hast continued free from temptations of the flesh. For this accursed vice makes its advances secretly, often doing in an hour what in many years it had failed to effect. And it hurts the more grievously, and wounds the more fatally, the more friendly the form it assumes, and the less ground of suspicion it seems to give. And there's often great danger, as experience has shown and still shows, in intercourse which is indulged in under fair and lawful pretexts, such as kindred, relations of duty, or, again, great virtue in the person beloved. For the poisonous pleasure of sense insinuates itself into this over-frequent and imprudent intercourse, instilling its venom gradually, until it penetrates into the marrow of the soul, and darkens the reason more and more, till at last no account is made of things which are really dangerous, such as mutual glances of tenderness, loving words, and the enjoyment of conversation. And so, a change creeping over both, they fall at last into destruction, or into some temptation most hard and toilsome to overcome. Once more I say to thee, fly, for thou art as stubble. Trust not to being bathed and filled with the water of a good and strong purpose, and resolved and ready to die rather than offend God, for inflamed by frequent stirring, the heat of the fire will gradually dry up the water of thy good resolve, and when thou art least on thy guard, it will so enkindle thee that thou wilt respect neither friends nor kindred, nor fear God, nor regard life or honor, nor all the pains of hell. Therefore, fly, fly, unless thou wouldst be overtaken, captured, and slain. Secondly, avoid idleness, and be awake and vigilant and busied with the thoughts and deeds which befit thy state of life. Thirdly, never resist the will of thy superiors, but show them a ready obedience, fulfilling promptly all their commands, and most willingly such as humble thee most and are most opposed to thy natural will and inclination. Fourthly, beware of forming rash judgments of thy neighbor, especially with regard to this vice. And if he have manifestly fallen, have pity on him. Be not bitter against him, nor hold him in contempt, but rather gather from his fall the fruit of humility and self-knowledge, confessing thyself to be but dust and ashes, drawing nearer unto God in prayer, and shunning more carefully than ever all intercourse wherein there may be even the shadow of danger. For if thou art forward to judge and despise others, God will correct thee to thy cost, and suffer thee to fall into the same fault, in order to convince thee of thy weakness, that by such a humiliation both sins may be cured. And even if thou shouldst escape this sin, yet unless thou lay aside thy uncharitable judgment of others, thy state will be very insecure. Fifthly, and lastly, beware, lest, finding thyself favored with some enjoyment of spiritual delights, thou feel a certain vain complacency therein, and imagine thyself to be something, and that thine enemies are now no longer able to assault thee, because thou seemest to thyself to regard them with disgust, horror, and detestation. If thou art incautious in this matter, thou wilt easily fall. 2. During the temptation, consider whether it proceeds from internal or external causes. By external I mean curiosity of the eyes or ears, over-softness in dress, habits and conversations, which excite to this sin. The remedies in this case are purity, modesty, the refraining from seeing or hearing anything which excites to this vice, and as I said before, flight. The internal are either the rebellion of the flesh or thoughts of the mind proceeding from our own evil habits or from the suggestion of the devil. The rebellion of the flesh must be mortified by fasts, disciplines, hair shirts, vigils, and other similar austerities, as discretion and obedience may direct. Against all thoughts, evil thoughts, from whatever source arising, the remedies are as follows: occupation in the various duties proper to our state of life, and prayer and meditation. Prayer should be made in the following manner. When first conscious of the presence of these evil thoughts, or even of such as may betoken their approach, fly for refuge at once to the crucifix, saying, "My Jesus, my sweet Jesus, help me speedily, that I may not fall into the hands of this enemy." And sometimes, embracing the cross on which thy Lord is extended, and kissing repeatedly the wounds of his sacred feet, say lovingly, "O beauteous wounds, chaste wounds, holy wounds, wound now this miserable, impure heart of mine, and free it from all that offends thee." At the moment when temptations to carnal pleasures assail thee, I do not advise thee to meditate upon certain points recommended in many books as remedies against these temptations, such as the vileness of this vice, its insatiable craving, the bitterness and loathing, the peril and ruin of estate, life, honor, etc., which follow in its train. This is not always a certain method of overcoming the temptation. For if the mind repels these thoughts on the one hand, on the other, they afford an opportunity and expose us to the danger of taking pleasure in and consenting to them. Therefore, the true remedy in all these cases is flight, not from these thoughts alone, but from everything, however contrary to them, which may bring them before us. Let thy meditation, then, for this end be on the life and passion of our crucified Redeemer. And should the same thoughts again intrude themselves against thy will and molest thee more than ever, as will probably, very probably happen, be not discouraged on this account, nor leave off thy meditation, but continue it with all possible intensity, not even turning from it to repel such thoughts, but giving thyself no more concern about them than if they in no way belong to thee. There is no better method than this of resisting them, how incessant soever may be their attacks. Thou wilt then conclude thy meditation with this or some similar supplication: "Deliver me, O my Creator and Redeemer, from mine enemies, to the honor of thy passion and of thine unspeakable goodness. Suffer not thy thoughts to recur again to the subject, for the bare recollection of it is not without danger. Neither stay at any time to reason with such temptations, to find out whether thou hast consented to them or not, for this is a device of the devil, who seeks, under the semblance of good, to disquiet thee, and make thee distrustful and faint-hearted, or hopes, by entangling thee in such discussions, to draw thee into some sin. Therefore, in this temptation, when the consent is not evident, it is sufficient that thou confess the whole briefly to thy spiritual father and then rest satisfied with his opinion without thinking of it more. But be sure faithfully to reveal every thought to him, and neither be restrained from so doing by shame or any other consideration. For if in dealing with all our enemies we need the grace of humility to enable us to subdue them, in this case, more than in any other, we are bound to humble ourselves, this vice being almost always the punishment of pride. Number 3. When the temptation is over, however free, however perfectly secure thou mayest feel thyself from danger, keep far from all those objects which give rise to the temptation, even though thou should be induced to do otherwise for some apparently good and useful end. For this is a deception of our evil nature and a snare of our cunning adversary, who transforms himself into an angel of light to bring us into darkness. Chapter 20. How to Combat Sloth. To avoid falling into the miserable bondage of sloth, which would not only hinder thy progress towards perfection, but also deliver thee into the hands of thine enemies, thou must observe the following rules. 1. Shun all curiosity concerning worldly things and all attachment to them, and also every kind of occupation which belongs not to thy state of life. 2. Endeavor earnestly to respond immediately to every inspiration from above and to every command of thy superiors, doing everything at the time and in the manner which is pleasing to them. 3. Never allow thyself in one moment's delay, for that one little delay will soon be followed by another, and that by a third, and this again by others, and to the last the senses will yield and give way more easily than to the first, having been already fascinated and enslaved by the pleasure they have tasted therein. Hence the duty to be performed is either begun too late, or sometimes laid aside altogether, as too irksome to be endured. Thus by degrees a habit of sloth is acquired, which, as we cannot disguise it from ourselves, we seek to excuse by vain purposes of future diligence and activity, while we are all the time held in bondage by it. The poison of sloth overspreads the whole man, not only infecting the will by making exertion hateful to it, but also blinding the understanding, so that it is unable to see how vain and baseless are its intentions to do promptly and diligently at some future season what should be done at once, but is either willfully neglected altogether or deferred to another time. Nor is it enough that we perform our appointed work quickly. We must, in order to bring it to its highest possible perfection, do it at the very time required by its nature and quality, and with all suitable diligence. For that is not diligence, but the subtlest form of sloth, which leads us to do our work before its time, not seeking to do it well, but dispatching it hastily, that we may afterwards indulge in the sluggish repose on which our thoughts have been dwelling while we were hurrying over our business. All this great evil proceeds from the want of duly considering the value of a good work performed at its right time, and with a spirit determined to brave the toil and difficulty put in the way of untried soldiers by the sin of sloth. Call to mind, then, frequently, that a single elevation of the heart to God, a single genuflection in His honor, is worth more than all the treasures of the world, and that as often as we do violence to ourselves and our sinful passions, a glorious crown of victory is prepared for us by angels' hands in the kingdom of heaven. Remember also, on the other hand, that God gradually draws from the slothful the grace which He had once bestowed upon them, while He increases that of the diligent, permitting them at last to enter into His joy. If thou art unequal at first to a bold encounter with toil and hardship, disguise them from thyself, that they may not seem so formidable as sloth would represent them. The exercise before thee is perhaps to acquire some virtue by many repeated acts, by many days of toil, and the enemies to be overcome seem to thee many and strong. Begin these acts, then, as if thou hadst but a few of them to perform, but a few days' conflict to endure. Fight only against one adversary, as if there were no more to be resisted, and in full confidence that with the help of God thou wilt be stronger than they. By this means, sloth will begin to grow feeble, and will make way at last for the gradual entrance of the contrary virtue. I would say the same of prayer. An hour's prayer, perhaps, is needful for thee, and this seems a hard matter to sloth. But apply thyself to it, as if intending to pray but for the eighth part of an hour. Thou wilt then easily pass on to another eighth, and so on to the whole. But if in the second, or any other of these divisions, thou shouldst feel too violent a repugnance and difficulty, leave the exercise a while, lest thou become weary, but return to it shortly. Thou shouldst pursue the same method with respect to manual labors, when thou art called upon to do things which to sloth appear many in number and difficult to performance, and so cause thee much disturbance of mind. Begin therefore quietly and courageously with one, as if thou hadst no more to do. And when thou hast diligently accomplished this, thou wilt be able to perform all the others with far less labor than sloth would have thee believe possible. But if thou dost not pursue this method and encounter resolutely the toil and hardships which lie in thy way, the vice of sloth will so gain the mastery over thee that thou wilt be forever harassed and annoyed, not only by the present toil and difficulty, which will always attend the first exercises of virtue, but even by the distant prospect of them. Thou wilt be forever in fear of being tried and assailed by enemies, or laden with some fresh burden, so that even in the time of peace thou wilt live in perpetual disquiet. Know also that this vice of sloth will not only consume by its secret poison the first and feeble roots which would in time have produced habits of virtue, but even the roots of habits already acquired. Like a worm in the wood, it will go on insensibly corroding and eating away the marrow of the spiritual life. By these means does the devil seek to ensnare and delude all men, but especially spiritual persons. Watch, therefore, and pray, and labor diligently, and delay not to weave the web of thy wedding garment, that thou mayest be found ready adorned to meet the bridegroom. And remember daily that he who gives thee the morning does not promise thee the evening, and though he gives the evening, yet promises not the morrow. Spend, therefore, every moment of every hour according to God's will, as if it were thy last, and so much the more carefully as for every moment thou wilt have to give the strictest account. Finally, I warn thee to account that day lost, though it may have been full of busy action, in which thou shalt neither have gained some victory over thine evil inclinations and thy self-will, nor return thanks to thy Lord for his mercies, and especially for his bitter passion endured for thee, and for his sweet and fatherly correction, when he has made thee worthy to receive at his hand the inestimable treasure of suffering. Chapter 21 of the Regulation of the Exterior Senses, and how to pass on from these to the contemplation of the divinity. Great watchfulness and continual exercise is needed for the due ordering and regulation of the exterior senses, for the appetite, which is, as it were, the captain of our corrupt nature, inclines us to an immoderate seeking after pleasure and enjoyment, and being unable by itself to attain them, it uses the senses as its soldiers and as natural instruments for laying hold of objects whose images it draws to itself and impresses on the mind. Hence arises the pleasure which, by reason of the relation subsisting between it and the flesh, diffuses itself over all the senses which are capable of it, infecting both soul and body with a common contagion, which corrupts the whole. Thou seest the evil, now mark the remedy. Take good heed not to let thy senses stray freely where they will, nor to use them when pleasure alone, and not utility, necessity, nor any good end is the motive. And if inadvertently they've been allowed to wander too far, recall them at once, or so regulate them that instead of remaining as before in a miserable captivity to empty pleasures, they may gather a noble spoil from each passing object and bring it home to the soul, that collected within herself she may rise with a steadier flight towards heaven to the contemplation of God. Which may be done in the following manner. When any object is presented before one of thine exterior senses, separate in thy mind from the material thing the principle which is in it, and reflect that of itself it possesses nothing of all that which it appears to have, but that all is the work of God, who endows it invisibly by his Spirit with the being, beauty, goodness, or whatever virtue belongs to it. Then rejoice that thy Lord alone is the cause and principle of such great and varied perfections, and that they are all eminently contained in himself, all created excellences being but most minute degrees of his divine and infinite perfections. When engaged in the contemplation of grand and noble objects, reduce the creature mentally to its own nothingness, fixing thy mind's eye on the great Creator therein present, who gave it that great and noble being, and delighting thyself in him alone, say, O divine essence, and above all things to be desired, how greatly do I rejoice that thou alone art the infinite principle of every created being. In like manner, at the sight of trees, plants, or such like objects, thou wilt understand that the life which they have not of themselves, but from the Spirit, which thou seest not, and which alone quickens them. Say therefore, behold here the true life, from which, in which, and by which all things live and grow, O living joy of this heart. So at the sight of brute animals, raise thy thoughts to God, who gave them sensation and motion, saying, O thou first mover of all that moveth, thou art thyself immovable. How greatly do I rejoice in thy steadfastness and stability. And if attracted by the beauty of the creature, separate that which thou seest from the spirit which thou seest not, and consider that all that exterior beauty is solely derived from the invisible Spirit, which is its source, and joyfully say, Behold, these are streamlets from the uncreated fountain. Behold, these are drops from the infinite ocean of all good. Oh, how does my inmost heart rejoice at the thought of that eternal infinite beauty, which is the source and origin of all created beauty. And on the discovery of other men of goodness, wisdom, justice, or similar virtues, make the same mental separation, and say to thy God, O most rich treasure house of all virtues, how greatly do I rejoice that from thee and through thee alone flows all goodness, and that all in comparison with thy divine perfections is as nothing. I thank thee, Lord, for this and every good gift which thou hast vouchsafed to my neighbor. Remember, Lord, my poverty and my great need of this very virtue. When thou stretchest out thy hand to do anything, reflect that God is the first cause of that action, and thou but his living instrument, and raising thy thoughts to him, say thus, How great O Supreme Lord of all, is my interior joy, that without Thee I can do nothing, and that Thou art in truth the first and chief worker of all things. When eating or drinking, consider that it is God who gives its relish to thy food. Delighting thyself, therefore, in Him alone, say, Rejoice, O my soul, that as there is no true contentment but in thy God, so in Him alone mayest thou in all things content thyself. When thy senses are gratified by some sweet odor, rest not in this enjoyment, but let thy thoughts pass on to the Lord, from whom this sweetness is derived, and inwardly consoled by this thought, say, Grant, O Lord, that like as I rejoice because all sweetness flows from Thee, so may my soul, pure and free from all earthly pleasure, ascend on high as a sweet savor acceptable unto Thee. When thou listenest to the harmony of sweet sounds, let thy heart turn to God, saying, How do I rejoice, my Lord and God, in Thine infinite perfections, which not only make a super-celestial harmony within Thyself, but also unite the angels in heaven and all created beings in one marvelous harmonious concert. Chapter 22. How the same things are to us means whereby to regulate our senses and to lead us on to meditate on the Incarnate Word in the mysteries of His life and passion. I have shown thee how we may raise our minds from sensible objects to the contemplation of the divinity. Now learn a method of taking occasion from the same to meditate on the Incarnate Word and the most sacred mysteries of His life and passion. All things in the universe may serve to this end, if first thou beholdest God in them as the sole first cause, who has bestowed on them all the being, beauty, and excellence which they possess. Passing on from thence, consider how great, how immeasurable is His goodness, who being the sole principle and Lord of all creation, was pleased to descend so low as to become incarnate, to suffer and to die for man, permitting the very works of His hands to arm themselves against Him and to crucify Him. Many objects will then bring these holy mysteries before thy mind's eye, such as weapons, cords, scourges, pillars, thorns, reeds, nails, hammers, and other instruments of His passion. Poor hovels will recall to our memory the stable and manger of our Lord. Rain will remind us of the drops of divine blood which fell from His most sacred body in the garden and watered the ground. Rocks will represent to us those which were rent asunder at His death. The earth will bring to our memory the earthquake at that hour, the sun, the darkness that then covered it. The sight of water will speak to us of that stream which flowed from His most sacred side. The same may be said of other similar things. Let the taste of wine or other liquid remind thee of thy Lord's vinegar and gall. If sweet perfumes refresh thee, think of the ill savor of the dead bodies which were round Him on Calvary. While dressing, recollect that the Eternal Word clothed Himself with human flesh, that He might clothe thee with His divinity. When undressing, remember Christ, who was stripped of His garments to be scourged and crucified for thee. If thou hearest the shouts and cries of a multitude, think of those hateful words, Away with Him! Away with Him! Crucify Him! Crucify Him! Which sounded in His divine ears. At each stroke of the clock, think of that deep sorrow and heaviness of heart which Jesus was pleased to endure in the garden, as the fear of His approaching death and passion began to fall upon Him. Or image to thyself those heavy blows which nailed Him to the cross. On any occasion of grief or sorrow which presents itself, whether thine own or another's, reflect that all these things are as nothing compared to the inconceivable anguish which pierced and wrung the soul and body of thy Lord. Chapter 23. Of some other means whereby we may regulate our senses according to the different occasions which present themselves. Having now seen by what means we may raise the mind from sensible objects to the contemplation of the divinity and of the mysteries of the incarnate Word, I will here add some helps for various subjects of meditation, that as the tastes of souls are many and various, so also may be their nourishment. This may be useful not only to simple persons, but also to those of higher intellect and more advanced in the spiritual life, who nevertheless may not at all times be equally disposed and ready for higher contemplations. Nor needest thou fear to be perplexed by the variety of the methods described, if thou wilt only observe the rule of discretion and attend to the advice of others, which I wish thee to follow with all humility and confidence, not in this instance only, but with regard to all other counsels which thou shalt receive from me. At the sight of all the things which please the eyes and are prized on earth, consider that all these are vile as dust compared with heavenly riches, after which, despising the whole earth, do thou aspire with undivided affections. When looking upon the sun, consider that thy soul is brighter and more beautiful if it be in thy Creator's favor. If not, that it is blacker and more hateful than the darkness of hell. When thy bodily eyes are lifted to the heavens above thee, let the eyes of thy mind penetrate even to the heaven of heavens, and there fix thyself in thought, as in the place prepared for thy eternal and blessed abode, if thou shalt live a holy life on earth. On hearing the songs of birds or other melodious sounds, lift up thy heart to the songs of paradise, where resounds a ceaseless Alleluia, and pray the Lord to make thee worthy to praise Him, together with those celestial spirits, forever and ever. If thou art conscious of taking delight in the beauty of the creature, remember that there the deadly serpent lies hid, ready and eager to wound, if not to slay thee, and say to him, O accursed serpent, how dost thou insidiously lie in wait to devour me? Then turning to thy God, say, Blessed be thou, O my God, who hast discovered to me the hidden enemy and delivered me from his ravenous jaws. Then fly at once from the allurement to the wounds of thy crucified Lord, letting thy mind rest on them, considering how acutely he suffered in his most sacred flesh to free thee from sin and make thee detest all carnal delights. Another way of escape from this perilous allurement is to consider what will be, after death, the condition of that object which now so delights thee. When walking, remember that every step brings thee nearer to death. Let the flight of birds and the flowing of water remind thee that thy life is hastening far more swiftly to its close. Let storms of wind, lightning, and thunder remind thee of the tremendous day of judgment, and the kneeling down worship God and beseech Him to give thee time and grace duly to prepare thyself to appear before His Most High Majesty. In the variety of accidents which may befall thee, exercise thyself thus. When, for instance, thou art oppressed by sadness or melancholy, or sufferest heat, cold, or the like, lift up thy heart to that eternal will which for thine own good willeth that at such a time and in such a measure thou shouldst endure this discomfort. Then, rejoicing in the love thus shown thee by thy God, and at the opportunity of serving Him in the way He is pleased to appoint, say in thine heart, Behold, in me is the divine will fulfilled, which from all eternity has lovingly appointed that I should now endure this trial. All praise be to thee for the same, my most gracious Lord. When any good thought arises in thy mind, turn instantly to God, and referring it to Him, give thanks to Him for it. When reading, behold thy Lord in the words, and receive them as from his divine lips. When thou lookest upon the holy cross, consider that it is the standard of thy warfare, that for by forsaking it thou wilt fall into the hands of cruel enemies, but that by following it thou wilt enter heaven laden with glorious spoils. When thou seest a dear image of the Blessed Virgin Mary, let thy heart turn to her who reigns in paradise, thanking her that she was ever ready to do the will of God, that she brought forth and nourished the Redeemer of the world, and that her favor and assistance never fail us in our spiritual conflict. The images of the saints represent to thee so many champions who, having courageously run their course, have opened a way for thee, wherein, if thou wilt press onward, thou also shalt with them be crowned with immortal glory. When thou seest a church, thou mayest, amid other devout reflections, consider that thy soul is the temple of God, and therefore to be kept pure and spotless as his dwelling place. When thou hearest the triple sound of the Angelus, make the following brief meditations in conformity with the words which are said before each recitation of the Ave Maria. At the first stroke of the bell, thank God for that embassy from heaven to earth which was the beginning of our salvation. At the second, rejoice with the Blessed Mary at the sublime dignity to which she was exalted by her singular and most profound humility. At the third, adore, together with the Most Blessed Mother and the Angel Gabriel, the Divine Child just now conceived, and forget not reverently to bow thy head at each signal, especially the last. These meditations will serve for all seasons. The following, which are divided for morning, noon, and evening, belong to the Passion of our Lord, for we are deeply bound frequently to remember the sorrow endured by Our Lady on this account, and most ungrateful were we to neglect it. In the evening, then, recall to mind the anguish of that most pure Virgin at the bloody sweat, the capture, and the hidden sorrows of her blessed Son. In the morning, compassionate her affliction at his presentation before Pilate and Herod, his condemnation, and the bearing of his cross. At midday, meditate upon that sword of anguish which wounded the heart of that disconsolate mother at the crucifixion and death of the Lord, and the cruel piercing of his most sacred side. These meditations on Our Lady's sorrows may be made from the evening of Thursday till the Saturday at noon, the others on the remaining days of the week. I leave all this, however, to thy particular devotion and the occasions offered by external things, and to express in few words the method by which thou must regulate thy senses. Take care in all things and under all circumstances that thou be moved and drawn not by hatred or love of them, but by the will of God alone, loving and hating that only which he wills thee to hate or love. And observe that I have not given thee these methods for regulating the senses that thou mayest dwell upon them, for thy mind should almost always be fixed upon thy Lord, who wills that by frequent acts thou shouldst apply thyself to conquer thine enemies and thy sinful passions, both by resisting them and by making acts of the contrary virtues. But I have taught them to thee that thou mayest know how to rule thyself on needful occasions. For thou must know that there is little fruit in the multiplicity of spiritual exercises, which, however excellent in themselves, often lead to mental perplexity, self-love, instability, and the snare of the devil. Chapter 24 of The Way to Rule the Tongue. It is very necessary that the tongue be well bridled and regulated, because we are all much inclined to let it run on upon those things which are most pleasing to the senses. Much speaking springs ordinarily from pride. We persuade ourselves that we know a great deal, we take delight in our own conceits and endeavor by needless repetitions to impress them on the minds of others, that we may exercise a mastery over them as though they needed instruction from us. It is not possible to express in few words the many evils which arise from overmuch speaking. Talkativeness is the mother of sloth, the sign of ignorance and folly, the door of slander, the minister of falsehood, the destroyer of fervent devotion. A multitude of words adds strength to evil passions, by which again the tongue is the more easily led on to indiscreet talking. Do not indulge in long conversations with those who are unwilling to hear thee, lest thou weary them, nor with those who love to listen to thee, lest thou exceed the bounds of modesty. Avoid loud and positive speaking, which is not only odious in itself, but is also a sign of presumption and vanity. Never speak of thyself or thy doings, nor of thy kindred, except in case of absolute necessity, and then with all possible brevity and reserve. If others seem to speak overmuch of themselves, try to put a favorable construction upon their conduct, but do not imitate it, even though their words seem to tend to self-humiliation and self-accusation. Speak as little as may be of thy neighbor or of anything concerning him, unless an occasion offers to say something in his praise. Speak willingly of God, and especially of his love and goodness, but with fear and caution, lest even here thou fall into error. Rather, take pleasure in listening while others speak of him, treasuring up their words in the depth of thy heart. Let the sound of men's voices strike only upon thine ear. Do thou meanwhile lift up thy heart to God, and if thou must needs listen to their discourse in order to understand and reply to it, yet neglect not to cast thine eye in thought to heaven, where thy God dwelleth, and contemplate his loftiness, as he ever beholds thy vileness. Consider well the things which thy heart suggests to thee before they pass on to thy tongue, for thou wilt perceive that many of them would be better suppressed. Nay, I can still further assure thee that not a few even of those which thou wilt then think it expedient to speak would be far better buried in silence, and so thou wilt perceive upon reflection when the opportunity for speaking is past. Silence is a strong fortress in the spiritual combat and a sure pledge of victory. Silence is the friend of him who distrusts himself and trusts in God. It is the guard of holy prayer and a wonderful aid in the practice of virtue. Let us continue with our spiritual combat on side B.